Hi, and welcome to this week's VFX show. I'm Mike Seymour, joined, unfortunately, by Mark Christensen. How are you, Mark?
Oh, Mike, it's good to be back.
Having me in hysterics in the pre-roll. And John, how are you, John?
I'm glad to be here.
So, guys, this week we're going to stick our necks out and discuss that race, which is of no real importance and yet means everything, which is the race to the Oscar. And in 2008, this race actually started back in December, and we're down now to the wire. And as this show goes out, we are pre the announcement of the actual winner, but we do have the nominees. So I'd like to take you guys back, if I could, to December 12 last year, when they announced the films that were in contention for possibly going into the running to be on the shortlist to be nominated for the Oscar.
So you're going to go there, Mike.
I'm going to go there. And and I'm going to give you the list of the, at that stage, 15 films, and we'll just see maybe if any of them are big surprises. Some of them obviously went all the way through to nominees. So we started out with Australia, The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, Cloverfield, Benjamin Button, Dark Knight, Day the Earth Stood Still, Hancock, Hellboy 2, Hulk, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, Iron Man, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Mummy 3 or Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, Quantum of Solace, and The Spiderwick Chronicles. So those were the films that back in December had sort of qualified effectively to go forward for being selected to go into the bake-off. So the process is, for those of you that don't know, those films are the only ones that could be selected to go to a bake-off. The bake-off is where the nominees are able to present their work, at least part of it, without any making of footage, but they can talk about it. And then from there, the Academy members vote on which of the bake-off films actually get the nominee. Now, of course, the general public only cares about either what wins or what is nominated. But going back to December 15th, when you first heard that list, Mark, was there anything there that kind of surprised you? Or
You mean that Hancock was on that list?
What about you, John? Was anything surprise you, John?
Oh, yeah, I think that's pretty funny. Hancock was on the list. Spiderwick, I can kind of see why that would be on the list. You may not have liked the film, but you know, I think that there were some pretty clever effects going on in there. There were some really interesting particle systems in the fairy world that they were in Spiderwick, so I could see that. Quantum of Solace makes absolutely no sense to me at all why it would be on this particular list. I could see it on other lists. But I do understand why something like Hulk was on this list.
You do?
I mean, there's a lot of special effects in Hulk. I mean, it's got a lot going.
I guess we should talk about what we perceive the committee, or rather the members, end up voting on. And it's certainly the case that traditionally they like to see things that are both terribly filmic and an original. They like to see things that are kind of amazing, and they do kind of reward originality. Though they're not technical Oscars in the sense that they should only be rewarding originality, but it's unlikely if a film's only done stuff that's been done before that it'll be deemed worthy of the Oscar. And I think if we were looking down that list, what stood out for me anyway was that it was pretty obvious that Benjamin Button was leading the pack in terms of originality on screen. Of course, Journey to the Center of the Earth was a major 3D film, as in the stereoscopic sense. But it's it was probably Benjamin Button way back then that I thought was the most innovative in terms of technology. What about you guys? Mark?
Yeah, I mean, well, I thought we were actually going to just talk about the ones that got eliminated on that first round.
Okay.
And I would say of those, there weren't any that that meet that criterion.
Well, that's
I
what
think
I sort of,
by that,
yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think by that standard, I think the choices were fair enough. Some a little bit arbitrary. I mean, a couple of the ones that were in the next seven, which I guess you're going to get to next, could have been replaced with others. And you know, there are a couple that I would qualify with all due respect. I would call them big dumb effects movies, like The Mummy 3, and you could have easily, you know, you could have stuck Indiana Jones in there instead of that one, I think.
Well, going to the next series, the ones that actually were selected for the bake-off, we lost Prince Narnia, we lost Cloverfield, we lost Quantum of Solace. We ended up with, and we also lost Indiana Jones. We ended up with Australia, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, The Dark Knight, Hellboy 2, Iron Man, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and the Mummy. And actually, I think, I don't know, I thought The Mummy, you know, did... some pretty interesting work. I especially liked the the clay stuff, and it was really good massive systems in it. So I didn't have a problem. I guess the question is, any of the ones that didn't make it from the into the shortlist, you know, whether we robbed? Because there was a year when, for example, the Matrix guys really got slammed, not even getting to the Bake Off, which was kind of astonishing. I mean, there are years that you really, there are some incredible surprises in what is excluded from consideration. And the only film that maybe should have been in contention and wasn't, and I'm not quite sure why that was perhaps Speed Racer, because Speed Racer was certainly a film for me that was technically very innovative. I don't know that it was a great film, but in terms of technical execution of some of the complexity of the stuff that they were doing in the pipeline, I thought it certainly, you know, at least would have warranted a look at. What about you guys?
Well, it's worth remembering that those first rounds, the bake-off and the narrowing of the nominees down to three, those choices are made by peers within the visual effects field, as opposed to the Academy at large, which is the group that chooses the final winner. And so in that first round, you could take a movie that was basically a flop, like Speed Racer, and just get it in there because, actually, I think you make a valid point. I think in terms of uniqueness and really going for something different and really achieving it, Speed Racer, you know, it's kind of in a category of its own almost.
Yeah, and you're right. The actual executive branch of the effects part of the Academy is, you know, is not voting based on, you know, like as you do for the final Oscar, a broad range of stuff. It really is, you know, theoretically people that know what they're doing and very much, well, in fact, more than theoretically, I claim they do know exactly what they're doing. and so, yeah, you know, they would appreciate the technical expertise that went into something without even having to see a presentation. Well, we had the Oscar bake-off list, and the bake-off list, did either of you guys go to the bake-off this year?
No.
Oh, no.
I went to the bake-off last year, and I must admit I kind of enjoyed the cocktail party beforehand and the drinking more than I enjoyed the actual night, but mainly because...
Oh, that's right. Didn't you go with David last year?
I went with Jeff last year.
Oh, okay.
And Jeff, co-founder of FX Guide, and so we had a great time, but it was... very much the case that as they're not allowed to show making of stuff, you just get, you know, people making normally what is incredibly pithy remarks and for their 15 minutes and then moving on through to the, you know, seeing a clip from the film. I must admit, I wish I'd been there the year Jim Cameron pitched for Titanic. The famous story, which probably we've heard before, but there's a red light on the podium that goes off when you've got 1 minute left. And so that tells you that, you know, you have your 15 minutes almost up. And Jim Cameron stood up to pitch for Titanic. And the first thing he did is lean over, unscrewed the light bulb and put it in his pocket and say, if Titanic taught me anything, it's that you can't rush these things. And of course, no one in the Academy audience would dare have jumped up and told Cameron to get off the stage. And so he made the pitch. And of course, the film went on to win the Oscar that year.
And his speech was one of the latest, really, truly, iconically memorable ones, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
He lived up to it. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, he's a great speaker. Like, he just is incredibly engaging as a speaker.
Have you guys but that King of the World thing was just...
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. You mean at the actual Oscars themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, King
it's
of the
right
World.
Right up there with doing push-ups on the stage.
Yes, I must admit I didn't understand his accent. So when he started yelling "King of the World," I was like, "What? What?" I had no idea what he was doing. So
referring to his own film.
Sorry,
he was referring to his own film. In other words,
No. Reference. I understood that later, but I had to get it translated from American to Australian. So of those seven, I think I certainly went on record on Twitter or something saying that I thought that both Benjamin Button and Dark Knight would get through from the Bake Off list to the nominees, as they in fact did. But was there any question in your mind as to what the other nominees should be from the Bake Off list, guys? John?
Well, I have to say that this may be controversial, but that's okay. I think Cloverfield, in my mind, should have made the short list for sure. I mean, you can look at Cloverfield in a lot of different ways, but if the criteria is, different filmic and, you know, has a unique visual effects or a unique perspective on visual effects, I don't understand why Cloverfield wouldn't have made that list.
Well, I mean, who would you have bumped out to make room for it? Do you have a...
Well, we're talking about the short... We're talking about the short list currently, which is Australia, Benjamin Button, Dark Knight, Hellboy, Iron Man, Journey, and Mummy. Well, Mummy can go. I mean, I agree there's some really great stuff in Mummy, but I don't think I looked at, you know, the Mummy and said, wow, there's something unique and different about what's happening here. It looked like an extension of a lot of things that I've seen before. Granted, very good work, you know, amazing, looked great, but it wasn't something where I just went, holy cow, what am I looking at? Whereas Cloverfield was a movie where I thought, I haven't seen anything like that before.
I'd have lost, I must admit, I'd have lost Hellboy 2 before that, but only because, you know, I thought that was that was part two of another film anyway. So actually, it was part two of another Hellboy film.
I mean, if you respect my big dumb effects movie category, I actually think Hellboy 2 was in many ways the best of the big dumb effects movies.
I just thought it was Pan's Labyrinth, The Leftovers. So, you know.
Yeah, I think I'd said that on the VFX show, the famously titled Hellcock VFX show, where we did both Hellboy and Hancock, and maybe merged them in an inappropriate way.
Yeah, and it was tough. I mean, in retrospect, it was really difficult to give Hellboy its due in that show. You know, and I still would be challenged to do so. It just had a lot of stuff in it, and you know, but basically, I mean, I think, look, people who love a lot of CGI candy would be very satisfied by Hellboy 2. It's got a lot of really satisfying...
I think it's a shame to not get to the Bake Off, because at least at the Bake Off, you get to present your work to your peers, and there's a real level of satisfaction that that gives a effects house, and in particular, obviously, the nominees that get to stand up the front. And it is tough. I mean, obviously you want to go on and win, but, you know, it's it must be hard to hear that you're in consideration and don't even get to the Bake Off, at least a chance to sort of, you know, tell your side of the story, as it were.
Yeah. Do we think that, I mean, we haven't spoken about this particular film, and I understand a lot of great people did a lot of great work on it, but do we really think that Journey to the Center of the Earth was meets the criteria of being something that's different or being something that's new? I mean, I would have put a lot of films, even Hulk, above Journey as far as the visual effects.
It was pretty complicated doing stereoscopic visual effects to the level that they were doing. I think that
I see. So that was the key that I think maybe pushed it over.
Yeah,
over,
I mean,
the hump.
If there's a basket of effects consideration points, you know, there is no other film that we've seen. I mean, I can't actually remember any other visual effects 3D film having, you know, like a mainstream film coming through like that. And so it was sort of the first of its kind in terms of big effects 3D films. It wasn't like an IMAX or a special venue thing. So
any future ride film is going to have to reference that film.
But you know, it's, I mean, I think it was fair enough that it got to the Bake Off and that people discuss, you know, what it took. I don't know that I feel very strongly that Iron Man deserved the third space in the nominees list, which it got. I think it was a no-brainer that Dark Knight and Benjamin Button were going to get through. I hoped that Iron Man was going to get through, but I thought it was less of a certainty. Not for any other reason than, actually, I think a lot of the visual effects were so invisible in Iron Man, it was really hard to kind of pick some of the stuff that they were doing.
Well, and, you know, truthfully, Australia had, I think, a decent shot just in terms of how many different things it's doing in that one movie. And, you know, here you have a director who's taking a different approach. I mean, his visual style he's like Fincher, where there's an element of almost what you might consider motion graphics in some of his visual work. But, boy, in terms of variety of just stuff in the movie and how well executed a lot of it was. I mean, I don't know. I just thought Australia kind of bridged being the big type of film that tends to suit the Academy Awards.
Yeah, I think definitely there were some magnificent sequences in Australia. In particular, I'm very, very much in love with the Darwin bombing stuff at the end and how that was, you know, the look of that and the way that that was sort of done. I just don't know that, you know, I could honestly say, hand on heart, having actually known a lot of people that worked on Australia, that Iron Man, you know, wasn't more deserving, because I do think the Iron Man stuff was flawless. I think there are some shots in the first half of Australia that maybe aren't really quite where they should be. I think Australia was being rewarded for the Bake Off level, because there was a lot of work between studio and Outback, where they were literally shooting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from the nearest town, intercut with studio work. And yet I think in the first half there were some what should have not been really noticeable effect shots. I'm not talking like the big stuff here. I'm talking like, you know, sky replacement-y type stuff that just ran out of steam. Whereas the big effect stuff that was done by Animal Logic and Allura, I thought was really first class. I just think that they suffered from the B grade effects facilities not holding up their end of the film. Whereas you couldn't fault almost a shot in Iron Man. Does that make sense?
It does.
But, you know, I mean, I think in this respect, if you look at the four that didn't get to the three, if that makes sense, Australia, Hellboy, Journey and Mummy, it would have been interesting to hear all of those presentations from all of the visual effects supervisors. And God only knows, the visual effects supervisors and people involved in those four films are some really, really talented people. But let's give credit now to the top three that actually have got to the point of nominees. And we're now on the radar of, I guess, the sort of the popular public, you know, who sort of keep tally on these things. And I think the visual effects category is really interesting, because it seems to me in almost every other category, you get penalized if your film was a huge box office hit. It's almost like you don't get to win Best Actor and make a fortune, Titanic being maybe the notable exception. But in this particular case, in the visual effects category, big films like Lord of the Rings and stuff that have gone incredibly well at box office also often times as not tend to go terribly well in the Oscar category. And it is kind of funny that you've got to put down just four names for those people that should be nominated, because in many respects, the visual effects category now is a company category. I mean, it's, you know, it's simply not the case that four people do the visual effects. It's like a team of, what, you know, hundreds. I mean, Mark, you are very comfortable with these three?
Absolutely. And not only that, it's interesting that the four that were eliminated have in common that none of them, I think, got any other Oscar nods, at least not in a major category. They may have gotten other technical or quasi-technical awards. I didn't track them, but I mean, they're not films that the Academy is really paying much attention to, whereas these three very much so. And you know what's funny about it is, I mean, Button's got the most nominations overall, but the other two films actually kind of kicked its butt in terms of critical response and box office.
I mean, I think, yeah, I guess that's, what do you think, John, you know, about that, about Mark's point?
Yeah, no, I think he's right. I think that, you know, the one exception to that was I believe that Australia is nominated for costume design, but I think that's the only one that really is, of the list that didn't make it, that's the only one that really went through to anything else. And, you know, I think I agree with Mark's point. I think it's interesting to me, Dark Knight was, and Iron Man were both huge box office successes. I mean, Dark Knight was crazy.
Well,
right?
It was just running up on Titanic as the most successful film of all time.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me. My experience in the past is exactly what you're saying, that it's very rare that something is both a commercial success and a success at the Oscars. I mean, usually it's the kind of sleeping giant, if you will. I was happy to see, and I actually very frankly happy to see, that Iron Man also received a nomination for Best Sound Editing. Because I personally think that Iron Man and WALL-E were the two films where the sound was just, it was spectacular. I mean, it was just, it was over the top. I mean, I can't remember a film probably in the last decade that had better sound editing than Iron Man and WALL-E did this year.
I'm glad you brought up WALL-E because I totally agree with you there on sound. Absolutely. And the other thing I think is that I'm really glad that there's now a category for best animated film because, quite frankly, it was embarrassing before when the fully animated films weren't getting a nod in visual effects when there was no other category for them. And quite frankly, you know, the skill base required to pull off a WALL-E is very comparable to the skill base required to pull off one of the, you know, the major Benjamin Button films, and yet somehow it wasn't getting the same respect. And so I think both points, the sound and just, you know, generally the appreciation of the talent that goes into fully animated features. To get back to Mark's point for a second, Catherine Martin actually nominated three times. She won it for her Oscar for Moulin Rouge, and CM, as she's known, the wife of Baz, is an incredibly talented costume designer beyond belief, and so I was personally really glad that she got the nomination. And I don't know that it's the case in America, but certainly outside Australia. Sorry, okay, I'm using my terms carefully. Outside the US, the film Australia found an audience which it didn't find in the US. I'm not quite sure why the Americans didn't respond to it, but there you go. Hey, look at the... I think I could point out, it's a bit controversial, but what's really interesting, if you want to get slightly bitchy for a second, is to try and track the names that are the four names put forward on any Oscar nomination, because I kind of alluded to it before, it being a company thing. But I'm not referring specifically to the nominees this year, but can you imagine how hard it would be to pick the four names that would go forward? Like, you've got multiple companies sometimes contributing. Obviously, the VFX supervisor is, you know, but then after the VFX supervisor, they're going to be second and third and fourth spots to be filled. And man, that must be some kind of wicked negotiation that's going on behind the scenes as to determine whose name goes forward.
Boy, I'll say, and it does bring up the point you made earlier about how the second level studios really have to step up for a film to make it all the way through. I mean, last year we had a film win that actually had, you know, quite a few different studios contribute to it, even though I think it won predominantly for the creature work, but or the work of these animated characters interacting, you know, with that environment. Nonetheless, I mean, there were what, 3, 4, 5 different houses that meaningfully contributed to that one. And this year, like, I noticed Craig Barron's up there for Button. That's great. You know, how great that Matt World, which really got to show off a little bit in that film, is getting recognized in that way, and that he could be standing up there on the stage getting a statuette.
Yeah, I mean, Craig is just, you know, quite possibly one of the great matte painters of all time, and it's, you know, something that people focus on a lot, the facial aging work that was done in Button, but the entire environments were magnificent, you know, from the Russian stuff through to you know, to New Orleans, and I was really happy to see his name up there. I mean, there are some great names amongst the nominees. I mean, John Nelson, Ben Snow, you know, Paul Franklin, like Tim Webber. These are really great people. It's a hugely talented group. I mean, I really don't want that group to have a car accident, or the entire VFX industry is in serious trouble. But so I guess we should bite the bullet and actually go forward and say who we think is going to win. So can I get some opinions? Can we be willing to bite the bullet and name names? Starting with you, John.
Button.
And
I think
why?
Benjamin Button will win. And I think it'll win for a couple of different reasons. The first of which is that it, from a box office perspective, was the least successful. And so I think there's a little bit, you know, we're human and we all have a big heart. And we have empathy toward people, and I think there's a little bit of that psychology playing into it, where, you know, just like the rest of the Oscars, the one that's maybe not the biggest box office success is the one that maybe needs to be rewarded, and I think we're going to see a little bit of that. But I also think that there's this meme going around where it's like, oh wow, you know, the first 52 minutes of the film is not really Brad Pitt. It's just, you know, an actor with Brad Pitt's face, you know, 3D tracked and all this other stuff on it. And I think that is in people's minds very heavily. And when you try and rationalize through that point, it's really hard to imagine anything else coming close to that level of a visual effect. So I think people are really focused or fixated on that part of it as well.
Yeah. I think you're saying that generously. I think there's a counter point of view that says that people kind of just think, well, they've made heaps of money, I'm not going to give them a bloody Oscar too. But I like the way you expressed it in terms of rewarding that did not go well. I think that...
Well, I'm correct, right, in saying that Button was the least successful from a box office perspective.
Yeah, I think there's some really... I mean, I think sort of should underline here that while we've been talking, obviously, as the VFX show, in terms of, physical effects stuff, like there is people like Chris at Dark Knight and stuff who were doing the practical physical effects that are also listed. So, of course, the Oscars are recognizing SFX and VFX. I guess for my money... Button's a big VFX play. Dark Knight is more of a SFX and VFX play because there was lots of incredibly good special effects in there, like the truck flipping. That was just hardcore special effects, of which we haven't seen anything else get close, I don't think. Would you agree with that, John?
Absolutely. Now, and so you know, then, I noticed the makeup as well, both of these, Button and the Dark Knight, and in fact Hellboy are in the makeup category, which is another kind of effect.
Yeah, and so the question I've got is, if you're predicting who should win, is it just a matter of who deserves it, or is it a matter of knowing that the Academy has a lot of voters that are coming from different disciplines? You know, is it like, for example, if there was, to say this sort of slightly unkindly, but if there was like a special effects group, are they more likely to favour a film that has special effects, not just visual effects? And vote behind Dark Knight. I mean, this is sometimes something that people point out in terms of ILM's chances with, say, Iron Man, is that there are so many Oscar winners and nominees that are ILM either employees or alumni that ILM tends to go very well because, you know, they just have like a – they've just such a vastly huge pedigree of producing Academy Award nominees that so many people that are actually voting are associated with ILM that perhaps that gives them a good shot. So what about you, Mark? Are you going to stick your neck out and pick one?
Yeah, I will. I have some other things to add to what's just been discussed as well. I mean, first of all, I want to give a shout out actually to Todd Vaziri at, he does a blog called Effects Rant. blogspot.com. Todd is a supervisor at ILM, and last year he actually did a really nice job of actually charting what the correspondence was of both box office and critical acclaim to the VFX winner, and there are all kinds of charts in there. You can check them out.
What was he addressing?
So the site is FXRant, FXRANT. blogspot.com, and you'll have to dig into his archives a little bit to get his three or four article series about the effects Oscars. Basically, what he found out is that there's a fair to middling correspondence between box office, but there's a pretty high correspondence between critical acclaim. And you combine that with the fact that Button got a lot of nominations and probably isn't going to win all that many of them, if I'm right. But you've got a bunch of, I mean, Todd's point, and this is the thing I wanted to call out, is that most of the voters in the general round in this final for the award are a bunch of retired actors. That's like the preponderance of votes are retired actors who, you know, are going to respond emotionally. They're going to respond to the buzz on the film, which bodes ill for Dark Knight this year. They're going to look at something like the Two-Face effect, which I think was pulled off really well, but maybe not like it because it kind of went more cartoonish than a lot of the rest of that film did. So responding emotionally rather than technically to the work. And, you know, the other thing is that it used to be considered a big advantage if a movie comes out closest to the actual Oscars. And that could actually be working against Iron Man a little bit because if you remember on this show, I mean, the excitement about Iron Man when that came out was just palpable. I mean, I remember you and Brinkman and David couldn't wait to get in and record that show. Like, and the thing was just, it had a huge opening. It was such a sleeper phenomenon when it came out. Whereas, you know, Dark Knight, everybody was waiting months for that thing to come along. But by now, I don't know that that excitement is still with it. And, you know, I think Button's going to get dinged a bit for being a little bit of an echo of another big Oscar winner, Forrest Gump. But I think in this category, people are going to give it up for Button.
Give it up for Button. Well, I do think it's going to be between Benjamin Button and Dark Knight. I would be really surprised if Iron Man won, because I think people that are in VFX discount Dark Knight a bit, but I think you really need to think about the special effects component of that, because that really was a cracker. And the fact that it was an IMAX, and the fact that I don't know actors like digital actors. I would have said initially when I first saw the list that I thought Benjamin Button was going to win, but I'm actually now leaning to the Dark Knight. I think Dark Knight could be a dark horse and actually come through and win, mainly because I think probably for my money, Benjamin Button should win. And if I was voting, I would cast my vote for Benjamin Button because of the exceptional quality of the digital actors. But I'm concerned that the live actors at the actual voting events will favour a film that features very strong acting performances. And I think Dark Knight has some of the strongest acting performances of any of the films we've talked about. And also they'll just, the special effects just push it over the edge. I don't know, normal actors really like the idea of having 50 minutes of a digital actor that you couldn't tell it wasn't a real actor. I think they find that a bit frightening. So if I can split my vote, I'll say I would have voted for Benjamin Button to reward the work, but I think Dark Knight will actually win it on the night. But there you go. I guess in closing up, I want to ask you, do you guys think this was a strong year? Do you feel like this was par, or do you feel like you know, this won't be looked back on as a particularly strong year for the fight for the Oscar?
I think it was a strong year in terms of the three nominees. They're good films, you know. And that there certainly have been years where the correspondence between the nominees and, you know, the quality of the film just really isn't there. And that's discouraging, even if it's a year in which, unlike this past year, there are just a lot of really good films. So I think this year was a little thin overall, but I think those that found their way to the top here are really strong.
What about you, John?
Yeah, I agree with that on all levels. I actually wanted to point out that this year turned out, it's sort of like at the 11th hour, as we say, this year turned out to be probably one of the strongest years for film in general that I can remember. You had, and I just have to go through this. You had Frost Nixon, you had Milk, you had Slumdog Millionaire, The Reader. I thought Richard Jenkins was amazing in The Visitor. You know, you had obviously The Dark Knight and all of these films which we're talking about, but then Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. I mean,
that was a pretty amazing performance, wasn't it? I kind of wish that we were allowed to do a VFX show about The Wrestler or Frost Nixon or stuff, because yeah, I mean, as a film, just as a film-going punter who pays his, you know, money and goes and buys his popcorn, I found those films to be... I actually found The Wrestler to be so emotionally convincing that I was depressed about my own life after I finished watching it. I was like, wait a second. I'm like, you know, because I just felt like, you know, when you get so involved in a film that you actually carry the emotions out of the theater with you? And it's like the first 10 minutes after I stopped feeling that film, I was like, wow, man, I feel really down. I was like, hang on a second. But yeah, and of course I loved him back in the day when he was doing Francis Ford Coppola Rumblefish. I mean, I just thought he was just a pagan god back then. So I had both sides of that coin. It's like, you know, if you'd known The Wrestler when he was at his height, seeing him at a card table, you know, flogging VHSs would have been depressing. In the same way, you know, I just loved Mickey Rourke in Rumblefish and thought this was the coolest film man had ever made. And so was very disappointed when you know, his career didn't seem to be going anywhere about 5 years ago. So let's just stray for a second. And Mark, did you have any films that just really struck out for you this year? Just, I mean, got nothing to do with VFX, just because we've got you on the show?
Oh, no, I'm so unprepared. Well, I mean...
Because I think John makes a really good point, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
This is just, you know, you're not going to look back, I don't think, on this year and think, well, this was kind of lame and there was nothing. Or that the films don't stand up. Like, I think that years from now, I'll happily watch, like, A Dark Knight and feel that it was a great film. You know, it's not like a fast food kind of fix where 3 minutes after you finished it, it's really, you never want to see it again. I would happily go and watch Dark Knight again at IMAX tonight, and I would love it to death, and I've already seen it several times.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily well-made film, and there are quite a few of them.
I walked out of Dark Knight and blogged on Twitter that it was our generation's, you know, Godfather Part Two. I mean, I just couldn't get over how good I thought that film was as a film. Now,
well, right. and actually, on that note, Mike, you probably want to check out that blog I mentioned, because one of Todd's latest posts, he compares the way the symmetrical angles were used in The Shining and in Dark Knight. It's really well done with a breakdown of images and how they're used psychologically. It's great.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, really solid. Yes, and, you know, plus this year we have the bonus in my mind that the front runner is not a film like Juno, or even worse, Crash, which...
even worse, Crash, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and Juno, I liked it, don't get me wrong, but I think that Hollywood has swung so far toward the direction of IndieWood, and everything we're saying about, you know, the big epics only get rewarded in these categories like costume and VFX and sound design. You know, really, Hollywood, I think the pendulum has gone really far that way, and I don't know that, you know, some of the films that end up getting ignored and some of the ones that make it, I'm not sure that they're really enduring ones necessarily.
Well, do you remember on the Oscars telecast a couple of years ago, I think we met it last year or the 2 years ago, they went to a multiplex and they were saying to people, so did you see, and they started listing their nominees and they were like, nah. And they go, what did you think was a really good film last year? And they were like, Dumb and Dumber 2. You know, like the film going public, they were like their set of like what should be, it was like, I thought that film was really good. And, you know, it was like, did you see, you know, and they obviously completely played on that art house thing that you're referring to.
A question I was going to raise is, I mean, and getting back to the VFX category for a second, how much does it mean to one's career to win this award? And we've already noted that it's only the top few who are selected to even get the statue who get it. But Mike, can you speak to that at all?
Well, sure. In terms of special effects, an Australian, I was going to say Alex Cox, but I could be wrong. I know his surname is Cox. I apologize in advance. I just spaced. But I remember him talking about winning for, I'm going to say, Babe. And I could have got that wrong, but I know the quote is accurate. He said that you actually want to do is get nominated for an Oscar, not win one. In visual effects or special effects, because if you actually win the Oscar, everyone goes, well, you know, he's going to be so phenomenally expensive, I'm not going to get him on my film, right? And you just, the phone doesn't ring. But if you're nominated and don't win, well, then everyone assumes, man, this guy's really, really good, and he's not too expensive because he didn't actually win. He was Oscar nominated, which, you know, is going to help me get funding, and he must be really hungry to win next time. And so career-wise, the trick would be to be nominated and not actually go home with the Oscar. And this is apparently the most assured position for getting future work. For a company, however, companies love to be the principal effects house on an Oscar-winning film, as opposed to because, you know, apart from anything else, it's I remember when Lord of the Rings won. A friend of mine, Jeff Tobin, who's lecturing this term in FX PhD on Massive, you know, literally had a photo taken with the Oscar, and he sent it to me saying, "Yep, it really does weigh more than you think it does." You know, and you know, the benefit of just having your own staff being able to kind of benefit from knowing that they contributed to your facility winning an Oscar. I mean, what a tremendous morale boost for any facility and any company. And you know that there are four people up there that are winning it, but you also know in the industry that, you know, it really is a win for ILM as much as it is for a win for the actual individual, you know, like Dennis Muren, that actually, you know, goes up and grabs the gold statue. I mean, I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, John?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, I would love to be nominated, obviously, and I think that it would be exactly as you said, like somehow being nominated puts you on the list of the guy who is really, really talented but doesn't have the ego that comes with the statue. I don't know if that's how the rest of the world looks at it, but
out of curiosity,
the Australian that you're talking about, is that John Cox, the guy that did Pitch Black?
Yeah, I think it is John Cox. I'm sorry. I just
because Pitch Black is amazing. Like the creature work in that is fantastic. So I was like, is that the same guy? I don't know.
Yeah, it must be. I just had a complete space on his name, but suffering on no hours sleep in preparation to flying to to London tomorrow. So that's my own excuse. But yes, you're absolutely right. I should know that. And
I've only seen Pitch Black like five dozen times. So I was thinking, is that the same guy?
I think that it's tremendously helpful for a company to win, because apart from anything else, it really is at the level that for some films it's going to get the picture green lit that you've got, an Oscar winning team on it, it really helps a facility get what I think they should in terms of rates, because they can hold their ground on if you've got the Oscar winning team or that did whatever on it, and I think everybody knows that it's fairly rare that you're going to get somebody. I mean, obviously for special effects this is not the case, but for visual effects it's very rare you're going to get someone up there that isn't either an independent visual effects supervisor or a leader of, I mean, a Paul Franklin, somebody that's at DNEG. I mean, it's great for DNEG that Paul's standing up there, not just for Paul himself. As nice a guy as Paul is, it's a great reflection on the 450 people that work at DNEG in London. So whether it be Ben at ILM or whoever, I think the companies tag along. Well, we discussed Craig in terms of Matwell Digital, for example. It's a reflection on his whole company, and not just on Craig as an individual.
Well, and on the Button Show, we mentioned what a boost it would be for D2 to win with a bunch of human work in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've said several times, I think Digital Domain should have won for Apollo 13. Maybe an unpopular thing to say, but I just thought we'd had talking animals from Mr. Ed, and I thought the work they did back in the day on Apollo 13 should have got them an Oscar right out of the gate. But hey, but look,
not a very patriotic point of view there, Mike.
Well, no, that's true. I kind of like to think my loyalties are international, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully you aren't just biased to films out of San Francisco and LA.
Milk for the win.
Yeah, milk for the win. Oh, actually, speaking of being international and unbiased, I am super excited that Octopatty is in the list of best short animated films. Have you seen Octopatty?
I saw it at SIGGRAPH Asia, where it was a finalist for the SIGGRAPH. And in fact, it was if you get us a finalist for SIGGRAPH, you get into the running. Like, it's their version of getting into the Bake Off. You have to, it's one of the... it's like if you win at Sundance, that's gets you in the running for short films. So if, let's say you had John, you did your short film and got into Sundance and won at Sundance, that would put it in eligibility for the Oscar running. And so there are various key awards things like SIGGRAPH that lead into it. And I have to agree with you. I thought it was really, really good. An excellent film. Have you seen it, Mark?
I don't believe I've sat down and seen
John,
the whole thing.
John,
which
talk
is
about it,
because
it really is good.
Yeah, so it's basically a graduation film from a group of students at a university, which I refer to as Les Gobelins, which is obviously a French university. And the premise is pretty interesting. It's like a cartoon with a bunch of octopi in it. It's like just a couple of minutes long. And I think the thing that should be said about this film, speaking of people who contributed and scores and music and... we talked about that with Wally earlier. There's a guy who should be called out. His name is Kenny Wood, and he went to UCLA. He was in the UCLA Department of Music, and he basically wrote and recorded all of the music that's used in the film, or the short film, I should say. And there's a beautiful, I mean, just breathtaking violin performance by Dorothy Kwan.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is, 50% of what makes the film amazing is just that they knew how to set the tone with music exactly right, because that is, it's funny, it's the kind of film, it's up against Presto as well, the Pixar
short, which is magnificent.
Sure, It is magnificent. I agree. However, Octopati is emotionally significant. It's the kind of thing where you can watch it and you just feel something very powerful for octopi.
It actually got the jury award at SIDGRAPH Asia. And you're right, yeah, it was I can't pronounce the name of the school either, but I had the professor from the school talk at an event that I was at with Autodesk. And yeah, I mean, it was just amazing that they put that together and did it. And I do think it's really, really good. There were a couple of other really good films at SIDGRAPH Asia. I mean, short films, if you're looking around the net. This Way Up.
Oh, I have one.
I was going to say, This Way Up. And Junk, I think it's Junk. Was just an absolute classic. While you talk about the one you want, I'll just find this one Junk that I'm talking about because it was so good.
Sure. In the live action category, New Boy is a short film that if you asked me, what does it mean to beautifully shoot a film in terms of shallow depth of field and gorgeous color work, I would dare you to find a shot in the short that doesn't completely rule in both of those categories. It's just, I mean, it's a beautiful film. It's really touching, but it's actually a case where the visuals are so huge a part of the emotional quality of this film coming through. And it, you know, it's set in really ordinary, well, ordinary might not be the right word, but it's set in rather poor areas. I mean, it takes place in Africa and in a classroom in, I guess, Ireland. And but man, it's just, I mean, it would be difficult for a feature to live up to this. It's really that. It's like reading a really well written short story whose density would be really hard to sustain over a longer work.
Really? Well,
I thought so.
I have to look that up. I'll check it out. Do you think it's online anywhere? Or?
Yeah. In fact, I tweeted it, but it was long enough ago that you'd have a hard time finding it. I'll dig it out and retweet.
I said Junk. Actually, Junk made the film ETA that I was trying to remember. Have you seen ETA? If you go to junkworks.org, so that's junkworks.org. And if you click on productions, which is up at the top right, you'll see the first thing in the productions is ETA. And if you haven't seen
that. Oh, yeah, I've seen this, yeah.
I friggin' love that film. So anyway, we've strayed off the topic, but it's great to highlight a few indie and short films that are just outstanding. I will check out yours, John. Thank you. Oh, sorry, Mark, thank you for that. Okay, guys, we've got to wrap it up. I've certainly got to get a move on. Do you want to thank KM and the team, John?
Sure, absolutely. We would like to thank the tirelessly working, even when she's completely sick and out of her mind with some odd flu that is inexplicable and cannot be measured, Kristen Martin. She's fantastic. She's a producer and does all of the editing. So if we sound good, it's because she makes us sound good. We'd like to thank Lori Apthorpe, who does quite a lot of work behind the scenes. The totally awesome Kevin Hansen, who we wish would help us a lot more in the future, but he's been busy doing some. He's been busy doing some work for, I believe, PBS, a lot of visual effects and roto and stuff. So, go Kevin.
And it's a joint venture between FX Guide and Pixel Core. Hey, where can people find you, John?
I think the best place to find me is lifezero.org, or I seem to be Twittering quite a lot. I'm not sure how, but I broke the 1K mark as far as the number of followers I have.
Way to go.
Yeah, thank you. So it's just twitter.com/lifezero, and that's where I am most often spouting whatever controversial thing I have on my mind at that moment.
Mark, what about you?
Well, I'm still feeling like a Twitter noob in comparison and kind of a recovering blogger. But either way, you can find me as Flowseeker on Twitter or at flowseeker.com.
We actually have an interview over at FX Guide with Paul Franklin as part of the our Oscar coverage. So over at FX Guide, show 52 of FX Guide TV, I sat down with Paul in London. So if you want to check out that interview and hear him discussing Dark Knight, Please check that out. And that's over at FX Guide. And you can also find me, of course, on Twitter as Mike Seymour. I want to thank everyone for being our hosts this week. It's good to have you both on. Always fun talking to you guys. It's kind of not really like hard work, actually, sitting around with you guys talking about films. But hopefully we'll get together come April and NAB, where you guys have to turn up because we're planning a really big party in Vegas this year, something I mentioned. So, guys, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you guys for listening to us. We really appreciate it. Until next time, see you later. Bye.